Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
The scripture reading this morning will be from Acts chapter 9, verses 36 through 42. Acts chapter 9, verses 36 through 42. At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. The woman was full of good works and charitable deeds which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him to not delay in coming to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room, and all the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. But Peter put them all out and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, "Tabitha, arise." And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. Then he gave her his hand and lifted her up, and when he had called the saints and the widows, he presented her alive. And it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed on the Lord.
This month, we've been thinking about how we specifically can increase in kindness. And a verse that we've used to help us keep that in our mind and in our hearts is 2 Corinthians 9:8. If you would, let's all read this together. "And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed." Did you notice how many times in that verse words like "all" and "every" and "abundance" show up? There's something here that reminds us when we're following God, He gives us everything we need to continue to give those good deeds to others. One common thread that seems to connect human beings from century to century and from generation to generation is the desire to make an impact. The desire to impact culture or civilization and to do something that lives on past your own life. We can see this in ancient cultures that drove some of the structures that we can see in the ancient world, whether they were pyramids that were built, other structures that sometimes served as monuments, sometimes served as the graves for those who were rulers and who were thinking about the next life. Even if they didn't have all the details figured out, they wanted to leave some sort of impression. Even the Taj Mahal was designed as a mausoleum for the wife of the emperor. This incredible edifice that when you go there and when you see it, it's just shockingly beautiful, even from a distance. It's this incredible structure. And the hope is that it honors someone or that someone's name or reputation can continue to live on. We see that. We see that even in some of the technological innovations that have been made recently where we want to leave a legacy. And they have now even websites that you can go to that will catalog all of your social media accounts, that will collect all the pictures that you take and the things that you post and kind of create a repository online. And so if you subscribe to this service, family members will be able to access these photos and these status updates and your feelings and your thoughts on life even long after you're gone. We can also see a semblance of that in a short sentence that often goes on a gravestone or on a tombstone in a cemetery. There are some famous examples of epitaphs, some of which seem to be a little different, a little out of the ordinary. A man from the Netherlands named Ludolf van Kulin was the first to calculate the number pi, that 3.14. He calculated it out to 35 digits. And so on his gravestone, he wanted all 35 digits that he calculated there. Mel Blanc, who was famous for voicing Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Yosemite Sam, Porky Pig, Foghorn Leghorn, Barney Rubble, I mean, all the classics that don't seem to show up on TV as much anymore, but you know those classic Looney Tunes. His epitaph just reads simply, "That's all, folks." And that was his wish, that's how that would read there. Or even Winston Churchill's was famous for saying, "I'm ready to meet my maker. Whether my maker is prepared for the great ordeal of meeting me is another matter." And you can sort of picture Winston Churchill saying that. There are a lot of famous ones you can read, a lot that are famous for their wit and for being funny, some that are famous for their power in what they say. But how would you want yours to read? What if you had an epitaph that read like this? "He or she was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity, which he or she continually did." That would be a pretty good example, wouldn't it? That would be a pretty good legacy to leave. And when we get to Acts chapter 9, that's exactly the kind of legacy that Tabitha leaves for us. And as we think about kindness over this month, we're going to be focusing this morning on the ways in which kindness lives on. We've reminded ourselves every time we've gotten together this week that kindness is more than just a surface level activity. It's more than just being nice or doing something nice to someone. That's part of it. But it reflects something deeper. It reflects a change of heart and a change of life. And this week, as we've been thinking about this lesson, Tabitha's example has been one that has been a challenge for me. Sort of stepped on my toes a little bit. Thinking about a life that's constantly abounding in good deeds. You see, what happens when we come to God and we come to His Word is that when we start trying to think, okay, how can I live the way God wants me to live? It's not a surface level activity. It requires us to change essentially what we do, the things that we say and the way that we live. And sometimes that's hard. And sometimes we look at examples like Tabitha in Acts chapter 9 and say, "Wait a minute, you're saying that my life has to abound with these kinds of deeds?" Or we look in Galatians 5 and find out that kindness is part of the fruit of the Spirit. Part of the proof that I'm walking in the Spirit, that I'm in step with God, is that I'm showing kindness. And it's tempting to say, "Well, now, wait a minute, I don't mind reading the Bible and I don't mind, you know, going to worship and going to Bible class, but you're asking me to change the way that I live. You're asking me to change every day." Now that's pretty tough. It would almost be like going to a doctor. And when the doctor starts asking questions about your life, you say, "I'm having this problem, I'm feeling sick, I need you to help me." And they say, "Well, how have you been sleeping at night?" And you say, "Well, wait a minute, don't go there, we're not going to talk about that. I don't want to talk about how I'm sleeping at night. Okay, what kind of exercise are you getting during the day?" "No, I don't want to talk about that. We're not going to go in that area." You can see it would be hard for a doctor to diagnose what's happening if you're not willing to say, "Here's what my life is like. Let me tell you what I'm doing. Let me tell you how I live." And you look at that and diagnose what needs to change. It's hard for us to be formed into the image of Christ if I'm not willing to lay my life out and say, "God, how do you want me to live?" And so this month, as we think about kindness going deeper than the surface, we're asking some tough questions. How can I live differently? Here's what I'm doing. I'm not closing off the way that I live. I'm not closing off Monday through Saturday from our time together on Sunday. I'm not closing off what I do at work from my time in God's Word. I'm allowing God to see everything. And obviously, He can see it, whether I want Him to or not, but I'm setting it before Him, saying, "How can I live differently?" And so we see this beautiful description of Tabitha, also translated Dorcas. Both of those names have to do with the meaning of gazelle, and it seems that that was what her name meant. So we have that sort of understanding of the background. She's a giving person who seemed to be especially concerned with widows, what James 1 describes as pure and undefiled religion, caring for widows and orphans in their distress. And it's a fascinating situation because you're here in the time of the early church. And in Acts chapter 9, you can already tell that The beginning of that chapter is the conversion of Saul of Tarsus into the Apostle Paul, as he'll later be known. And so you start a shift here in Acts chapter 9, and so over the next few chapters, we go back and forth between what Paul is doing and what Peter is doing. But we're in an age where there are miraculous things taking place. And so Tabitha dies, and Paul's 11 miles away, and Peter is 11 miles away, and they send for Peter. Now, I don't know exactly what they expected, why they would send for him. It seems logical that because of the way burials were handled in the ancient world, specifically for Jews, burial would typically take place that same day. There was not a lot of time of preparation of the body, and so you handled that when someone passed away, you handled that immediately. And so maybe they're wanting Peter to come and to say some words, maybe offer some comfort. I don't think from the text we can see that they expect what's going to happen. Because keep in mind, by this point, there had already been Christians, specifically thinking of Stephen, who stood up and gave his life. Stephen was stoned to death, and he wasn't raised from the dead, so it doesn't necessarily seem like they expect what takes place to happen, but they call for Peter, and so he makes the journey. He goes in there, and he walks up to the upper room, and there he encounters widows who are showing the clothes, the garments. The text says both you have the outer and the inner tunics, the garments that had been made. And I don't know how you picture this scene. I used to picture it, Peter walking up to that upper room, and chances are it's built on a flat roof of a structure. And he gets up there, and that there are these stacks of clothes that Tabitha had been working on so diligently, and they're holding them up and showing them to Peter. I know the text doesn't tell us exactly how this happened, but that's not really the way I picture it anymore. I think it's pretty likely that those widows were wearing the clothes that Tabitha had made for them. After all, clothes were much more practical then. I mean, they met a specific need. You didn't have necessarily as many clothes in the closet as we would have today. And so it makes sense to me that you have widows who were coming up to Peter and they're saying, look what she made for me. Look what she did for us. And I don't know how many there were, but can you imagine person after person saying, she made this for me. She did this for me. Look what she did for me. Just one right after another. And so then Peter sends them out of the room. And there are plenty of moments in Scripture where I'd love to be kind of a fly on the wall and see exactly what happened. This is one where I'd love to know exactly what Peter was thinking. Did he know what was going to happen when he went up to the upper room? Did he know exactly what was going to take place? I think that we can probably imagine that he remembered something that happens in Mark chapter 5. I think that because there are some striking similarities between what we see and what we see when Jesus came to the house of Jairus in Mark chapter 5. Jairus had a daughter who was near death when he came to Jesus, and by the time they arrived, had died. He takes Peter, James, and John with him. And people are weeping over the child's death. And Jesus tells them to not weep. Do not weep. She's only sleeping. They're kind of incredulous that Jesus would say this. He sends everyone else out except for the family and his companions, Peter, James, and John. He takes the child by the hand and says, Talitha kum, which means little child, get up. And I just wonder if Peter would have thought about that when he had everyone leave the upper room. And when he made a statement that's only one letter difference, when he said, Tabitha, little gazelle, the name Tabitha kum, which means Tabitha, get up. And she did. At the end of this passage, Peter takes Tabitha's hand after God has raised her from the dead. Jesus, being the Son of God, does that before. But of course, Peter doesn't have that kind of power. It's God who accomplishes this raising of the dead, and Tabitha continues to live, likely continues to do what she had been doing. And yet there are other aspects of her life that would continue to live on even now. They live on for us. And so for a few minutes this morning, I just want us to reflect on the way kindness lives on. One is that there are inspiring examples of kindness that continue to live on. I love the way Tabitha is described as being known for the good deeds which she did. In fact, one commentator translated it this way. She spent all her time in the performance of good works and acts of kindness. How would you describe her? She was always doing something good. Do you know anybody like that? Do you know anybody that just always seems to be doing something good? It's not just once in a while. It's just every time you call that person, every time you see that person, they're on their way to doing something else. And it's not because they're trying to get attention. Sometimes you have to even draw it out of them. But they're consistently serving others. It's a powerful example. In fact, when we know people like that, when people like that enter our lives, it makes an impression. Because that's not typically what we see in the culture around us. In fact, in 1 Corinthians 15, when Paul writes to the Christians there, he says in verse 58, to be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. Not just doing the bare minimum, but to always be abounding. To always be abounding. I think probably this is true at every level of education. Whether it's elementary school or high school or college, if you're going on to graduate school, you want to know the requirements. You want to know, okay, what do I have to do to pass this course? What do I have to do to get a satisfactory grade? Or maybe on the job, you want to know, okay, what's our quota level? What's the baseline? What do I have to get done? What do I have to accomplish? And sometimes it's easy to let that same attitude carry over into our spiritual lives, and we say, okay, well, what's the bare minimum? What do I have to do? What are the boxes I have to check? But what we see from 1 Corinthians 15 and what we see in Tabitha's life is not just the bare minimum, but always abounding. More than that. Just constantly overflowing. Just can't get enough good deeds. Just can't do enough kind things. It's a pretty big challenge. And inspiring examples like that continue to live on. And there's a little phrase, too, that I think is helpful for us. When we read in verse 36, there are deeds of kindness and charity which she continually did. Your translation may just say, which she did. These were things that she actually accomplished. It's easy to think about kind things to do for other people. The challenge comes in actually doing them. Actually getting them done. I don't know if you're a task list person. I'm a person who likes to make a to-do list. I like to start off every day looking at, okay, what do I need to get accomplished today? And I have a little app that I use for that, and I've got a little list of things, and there's always more on the to-do list than you can accomplish in one day, right? Does that sound familiar? There's always more to get done. And so at the end of the day, a lot of times I'll click off the ones I've done, and then if there's something I didn't get to, I'll just move it to tomorrow. You know, that's just about the easiest thing you can do with a checklist, to just move it to tomorrow, right? We typically treat today like we're running out of time, but we treat tomorrow as if it's got 36 or 48 hours. Yeah, we can accomplish everything tomorrow. And there's something so easy about that. And I wonder sometimes with ideas we have in our minds, you know, I really ought to do this. I really ought to do this kind thing. I really ought to do this nice thing. And then we just sort of slide it over into that category, right? We just sort of say, okay, I will, you know, I'll do that. I'm going to do that. And then the next day comes, we say, you know, I am going to do, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that. And the next day, let me tell you, I'm really going to do this. This is going to be good. When I do it, that's going to be great. And we just keep moving it and keep moving it, and these were deeds that she actually did. They were more than just good intentions. And all of us struggle with that, don't we? If there's one area of this message that's really stepped on my toes this week, it's this one. Because I have a lot of things in mind that it would be great if they were actually put into action. But it's just so easy to let those remain just good intentions. So I would challenge all of us this morning. Is there something you have set out as a good intention? Something that you want to do? Something that is a good act of kindness that you've just sort of been rolling over day after day or week after week? Why not get that done this week? Why not do it today? Why not say, this is going to be an action that I've done. This is going to be something that I will do. It's almost like that commercial campaign a couple of years ago encouraging people to give that says, don't almost give, give. Don't say, I almost did that, do it. I think that's a challenge for us. In fact, in Proverbs chapter 3, the effect of kindness is described like this. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart so you will find favor and good repute in the heart of man. Proverbs writer is saying, if you want to be someone who will have a good reputation, you know, that starts with kindness. Kindness and truth that are part of you. These sorts of inspiring examples live on. And they can be infectious. When you see someone else doing that, it just encourages you to act in that same way. So inspiring examples live on, and kind actions themselves, the impact of these actions live on. You can probably think right now, and you may already have been thinking of someone who did something nice for you when they didn't have to, and it's impacted your life in such a way that you'll never forget it. There are certain things that live on past us. It's interesting that we had this text lined up this week. You know, we planned it out in advance. But just this week, as Catherine and I were talking, we found a couple of baby blankets that were made when we arrived here. When we came here 6 years ago, and Micah was just 6 weeks old, and Bonnie Langston in this congregation made us some beautiful baby blankets. And if you knew Bonnie, you knew she loved children, teaching children here in Sunday school, in Tuesday, Thursday school. And we were, I'm sure, one of many families that was blessed by her love and by acts of kindness. And she was one of the first people we met here that was showing us kindness. And here we have those. They continue to live on. They continue to live on. Those kind actions make an incredible impact on us. And there are probably things you have in your house that were given by people out of kindness who are no longer living on earth, but that kind action lives on. What are we going to do? What are we going to do this week that will live on past us? There aren't many things that make an impact the way a kind action would. You know, it's not going to be too long. We'll have our giveaway day. And as part of our giveaway day, there will be people that walk through these doors that we've maybe never met before. And it may cause us to step out of our comfort zone, to do some things we've never done before, to show kindness. But these kind actions could have an incredible impact. In fact, working in the church office during the week and meeting people around town, there have been several people that I've talked to who are positively impacted because of giveaway day. Because of acts of kindness. Because of people who said, okay, this isn't really my comfort zone. I don't like necessarily to get out and to meet people and to talk to them. But there'll be some people who'll be sitting here during giveaway day, and the best thing that we could give them, the very best thing we could give them, is a conversation. Is someone to talk to them, someone to listen to them, someone to discuss their life with them, to listen and really hear them and hear where they're coming from and hear what they're dealing with, to make them feel validated as a person. They might be struggling, but there's something special about that conversation. And it may cause us to do something that we might not be comfortable with, to introduce ourselves. But who knows what could happen? There might be someone who walks through that door who is blessed by giveaway day, and it changes their life for the better. There could be a Bible study that begins because of a conversation that happens in this building because of giveaway day. That's happened before. That could happen this year. And so if we're thinking about kind actions that could live on, we've got opportunities all around us to do things that will live on past us. I think all of us can relate to how important kindness is in our lives. And as we reflect on that, I don't know if you do this. I've got sort of a drawer in my office of notes, of thank you notes, of just kind notes that people have left over the years. And you know, there are several who have sent me notes that I've kept that are no longer living, but those notes are still powerful. That kindness still matters. Evidently, Tabitha had been ministering to widows, and we see early on that that was a huge need in the early church, taking care of widows. That's one of the first challenges the church faces in the book of Acts, is trying to make sure all the widows are fed, that no one is left out. She saw a need, and she started to work towards that need. You know, it might even be helpful for us to ask this question. At my funeral, when my life is the way has come to an end the way Tabitha's did, what are people going to be carrying with them? Maybe, what will they be wearing? I'm not talking about dress code, but would they be able to bring with them things that have been a blessing to their life because of kindness on my part? Would they be able to say, you know, he did this, she did this. There's an impact that was felt because of this person's work. I can tell you that over the last couple of months, we have had, as a church family, many funerals. And can I tell you that one of, as challenging as those days are, a blessing that comes from a funeral service is when it's a funeral service of the life of a Christian, where you can look around a room and you can see the impact of that person's life. And you can see it in their family, and you can see it in friends, in people that they've blessed, that they've worked with, people that loved them. There's a blessing there that is just hard to describe. And it's a blessing that we think about the person's life connected with that, but Christian service isn't about trying to exalt ourselves. And the people who positively impacted lives, they weren't looking for credit, they weren't looking for glory. They were trying to pass along a blessing from God. How can I pass along a blessing? Because not only will an inspiring example live on, not only do kind actions live on, but faithful lives will live on. And not necessarily in the way that Tabitha did. We see this resurrection that takes place here. Tabitha is brought back to life, and that's a physical setting. But all of us are going to live on past this life somewhere. There will be an eternal destination for everyone. And I think that's probably part of the reason that human beings want to create something that lives on past them, because there's a sense somewhere deep inside, even in cultures that lived generations ago, that this is not the end, that this is not all there is, that there's something else. And so if we think about that today, our question is, where will I be living on? If I'm living faithfully, I can have a hope in what Paul describes in 1 Corinthians 15. We've already read one verse from there, but I'd like for us to think about what else he says in 1 Corinthians 15 when he says in verse 53, this perishable must put on the imperishable, and the mortal must put on immortality. But when this perishable will have put on the imperishable, and this mortal will have put on immortality, then will come about the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is in the law. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Do I want to have the kind of life that will live on? What will my legacy be? What will I leave behind in this life, and where will I be headed in eternity? Those are important questions. They're powerful questions. They're questions that Acts chapter 9 helps us answer. I can change how I'm going to be remembered. I could change that today. It may be that you're living the kind of life and you say, you know, I don't know if I'd be proud of the way I'd be remembered right now. That can change. Beautiful message of the gospel is that forgiveness is available to everyone. We can all be part of that group that Paul discusses in 1 Corinthians 15, who have victory over sin and death through Jesus Christ. If you need to make that change in your life, if you need to become a child of God, you can do that. It may be that you have made that decision, but there's an issue that's come up. Maybe there are challenges you faced and you need prayers. If you'd like to pray with a couple of our elders right after this service, out that doorway, there'll be a couple of our elders who'd love to pray with you. But it may be that you want to take advantage of all these Christians here who would love to surround you in prayer, to encourage you any way that you can. When we think about the legacy we leave, we can choose what kind of legacy we leave. And that choice can begin. If things need to change, that change can begin today. If there's any way we can help you, please come as we stand, as we sing together.